हरिः ॐ सहनवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासरि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Was it with Saul?
I'm not sure.
No.
I'm not sure.
It's been a long time.
Yes.
I
would have heard that story. I'm not sure how old, but sometime, you know, like when you're like 10.
Yeah. When I found myself, when I don't, like, repeatedly, you know, read or chant, or it just fades away. There's an impression in the mind.
Yeah.
But it's very woke. Is that right? Vague.
Vague. Yeah, yeah. Well, it becomes more ethereal. Well, it's like the words and stuff like that. So when you're dealing in speech, the first thing is that there's that concept of the word. You know, so it hasn't even formed, but there's something that you want to express, that feeling, that impression. So that's the nod.
Mm.
And so that's the first chakra. Then it comes up to the second chakra, it gets, you know, the energy. The third chakra, then what it does, so it becomes a verb.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because you have a concept and you have the energy that will be expressed through that knowledge. The third is then what can be accomplished. So that's the verb. But then to accomplish it, you need to have something tangible, you know, that's accomplishing it. So that comes to the fourth chakra, that becomes the nouns. And then when it comes up to the fifth chakra, that's what you hear people speaking.
Mm.
So that's why as you're thinking, you're this and that and all that, that you're dealing, that because you're not seeing things yet, there's a feeling. That's the nod aspect. And when you start to see, okay, this word or that or like that, then you're dealing that third, fourth chakra.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's so like that. So the impression is there, but then whether you can articulate it, that's another thing. Okay, so then Krishna Sandarbha, Adhyayana 1, Adhikarana 3, enumeration of Lila Avatars and Vibhutis. Page 20. Another categorization of the avatars mentioned in the Laghu Bhagavatamrita chapter 4. This is all us, no?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, this is still the Prakashi. Okay. The avatars may be also divided into four categories: Avesha, Prabhava, Vaibhava, and Paravasta. So that's another way of looking at the avatars. So avatars' meaning is when the Lord then in some form or another is descending down into the material world and performs, you know, some function. So that's an avatar. So that's why Dvaitacharya is the avatar. Right, because then as Mahavishnu, he's come to the material world. Well, Nityananda Prabhu is expansion. So in the spiritual world, they're just expansions. They're not avatars. So then Krishna, you know, how you say Mahanarayan or Shankarjuna Aniruddha, you know, in the original quadruple or the second quadruple, or their expansions then is the 24 Vishnus. These are expansions. So Nityananda is the head of that. He represents that whole group. Then coming into the world and performing the pastimes and all that, then that is the avatar. So then Advaitacharya represents that position. Then he has his shaktis, you know, the Srup Shakti, that will be Garadhar. And then Shrivas will be the Jivas. You know, so in that way then the five tattvas are all there. So in dealing with the avatars of coming here, it doesn't mean that expansions may not come here. Like Balaram comes, Krishna comes. It means Krishna is the original. But Balaram may come, you know, any of these others, the Shringa, all these like that. So then, Avesha. The Avesha are the same as the Avesha avatars, such as Kumaras, Narada, Pitu. The Avesha forms as avatars of Lord is a secondary designation, since they are actually Jivas. Right? Avesha, also Shakti Avesha, you know, so Avesha is the basic. Prabhav, potencies. According to the scriptures, the Prabhava forms are of two types. The first type appears for a short period of time and is not well known. These are Mohini, Hamsa, and the white, red, Shama, and black forms of the Yuga avatars. The second type are Dhanvantari, Rishabha, Vyasa, Dattatreya, and Kapila. They are writers of scriptures and act like sages. The total number of Prabhava forms is 11. And then Vaibhava, excellences.
So it means that the Prabhavas, those who come for the short time, those are the first ones, and the second ones, they come for a longer time?
It means it's how you say?
And they're set every time they come?
Well, it means you're going to have the Yuga avatars, those are set, but you may or may not be so prominent of them. It's like when we hear of Yuga avatars, right? So then we're hearing we hear of Hamsa, but do we know much of the story or things like that? Ram we know, Krishna we know, Lord Chaitanya we know, but do we hear of any other of the manifestations of Ram, the other 999? Or of Krishna, or of Lord Chaitanya?
As Yuga avatars?
Yes. Yeah, like, you know what I'm meaning here? Means, in a day of Brahma, there'll be 1,000 yugas. In every yuga, there's going to be the Yuga avatar. So, out of this 1,000, we hear of the pastime of Lord Ramachandra, but in the next category, Paravasta. Right? But the other 999, we never hear about. Sometimes you hear about them like that, the Rajasic, Tamasic Puranas will mention something, or some passing comment will be made here and there. Does that make sense? So they're saying they're not very prominent. Means you know they're there, and they come up, Mohini, there's a pastime, it goes, but she's not a prominent. We're not like regularly quoting what Mohini Murti said or did.
And the second
thing, you know what I'm saying, is that, you know, basketball's all right because Mohini Murti was bouncing a ball, and so therefore then bouncing balls and all that, then is, you know, so therefore then it's, the NBA is bona fide.
Okay. Right?
You know what I'm saying, we're not, okay. The second type, Dhanvantari, Rishabha, Vyasa, Dattatreya, Kapila, the writers of scriptures and act like sages, so they'll be a little bit more prominent because then the scriptures are written, and philosophies are there. They're bringing out more. How you say? And they act like sages. So they're just basically saying is that it's a short period. While they come for a short period, and during that period, that pastime is there. While these others, then what they do, it may last beyond just their pastime. You know, so like, you know, we still, Vyasadeva or Dattatreya, Kapila, Dhanvantari, Rishabha, we're still hearing about them and hearing their philosophy and things like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. So there are 11 forms of Prabhava. So that will include the two types. Vaibhava, excellences. There are 21 Vaibhava forms: Kurma, Matsya, Nara Narayan, Varaha, Hayagriva, Prishnigarbha, Baladev, and the 14 Manvantar avatars. The Prabhava forms have less power, and the Vaibhava forms have more power. So, the Prabhava means to perform that pastime. It doesn't take so much of Krishna's potency. So he'll only manifest that much. But we see in the Vaibhava, they'll do something more special. And so then there's a greater potency. So, yeah?
I don't understand why they put Kurma and Matsya not in their Prabhavas. How much you need?
You have to hold up a big mountain.
Well, he needs to be able to hold the demons.
Baywatch did that too.
It's not obvious, let's say. Some of them are quite obvious.
It just means there's more power, there's some other. So that's why then they're in the Dasa Avatar. So we see is that the Dasa Avatar, and that will be all within this Vaibhava, the excellences. While the Prabhava, then there's a very specific thing that they're doing. So some are more prominent, some are like here. These are like sages and all that. And the other, then they may be here, Yuga avatars and that. So the Manvantara avatars then do more like Vamana. Then he's a Manvantara avatar. So they become more prominent. So you hear about these at all times. These others, then you hear about them for the, a little bit more limited. And then we see that the first type, then, you know that they're there, but you don't necessarily aren't referring to them as much. Varaha and Hayagriva, among the Nava, Vyuha, and Hari, Vaikuntha, Ajita, and Vamana, among the Manvantara avatars. Though Vaibhava forms are considered similar to Parnavasta forms. Right, so we're going to hear about that. So Varaha, Hayagriva, among the Nava, Vyuha, and Hari, Vaikuntha, Ajita, and Vamana, amongst the Manvantara avatars. So it's 21. So the 14 and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So these are, means this is specifically, they've all been mentioned.
And Navadvipa.
There are 9 forms of the Lord, Maharaj. I have to go through. It's meant given in, the book.
Okay, but you here you have 7 and 14, that's 21. But then if you have 2... Oh, okay, but that there's an overlap there. In other words, the 9 and these 7, they're common, but there's 2 more in the 9. So in other words, these 7 in Vaibhava that we mentioned here, Korma, Matsya, Nara, Narayan, Varaha, Hayagriva, Krishna, Garbha, are among what's called the Nava Vyuha. So there's another group of Nava. Like you have the Das Avatars, so there's also a Nava Vyuha. It's just different ways you can look. So they're saying that these, though by Bhava, they are considered similar to Paravasta. Paravasta. The remaining forms, Nrsinga, Rama, and Krishna, are considered Paravasta, superior position forms. The 6 qualities are fully manifest in Nrsinga, Rama, and Krishna. They are thus considered Paravasta. The relationship between the other two, Nrsinga and Rama, and Krishna, is like lamps lit from the lamp of full 6 powers manifest in Krishna. Padma Purana, Uttarakhanda, 226 and 42.
In that one,
I just read it yesterday.
Okay.
It mentions also 3. The exact same. But we heard about 5. But
I think there's some other places mentioned.
What's the reference? I'm not sure.
Yeah. Do you know? For the
You asked me to check, but it was not present in the book. The Laghu Bhagavatam doesn't say it. Anyway, they are like Krishna's. They come in the Swayam category of Krishna only, so.
Yeah, I mean, it's Krishna himself coming and Balaram's his direct expansion.
In Swayam category, Swayam Krishna.
Yeah, in Swayam, like that. If you come down into the Vaikuntha, then they'll be Vaibhava or like this. Maybe. Okay. Among the three successively, Nrsinga, then Rama, and finally Krishna, manifest more powers. So Nrsinga there, then Rama more than that, Krishna the most. Nrsinga displays abundant power, Prabhava Bhuma, while Rama displays abundant sweetness, Madhurya Bhuma. Therefore, of the 3 forms of Nrsinga, Rama, and Krishna, Krishna is the best. This is not astonishing because the nature revealed in Krishna is not seen in others. Okay, so then Paravasta specifically means these three. But it mentions here is that these Varaha, Hayagriva,
they're almost,
and then they're almost like Paravasta. They're like they're Vaibhava, and they're excellences that are within those categories, but the amount of potency that they're manifesting is greater. So it seems to be all these is going on how much power is being manifest.
Vaibhava plus.
Yes. Yeah, Vaibhava plus.
And the place even Vamana Avatar is also considered very high.
Yes. So Varaha, Hayagriva, and then Vaikuntha, Ajita, and Vamana. So they're have that much greater power. So Paravasta is the greatest, then the Vaibhava, but within of that then we see that these particular ones, Varaha, Hayagriva, Hari, Vaikuntha, Ajita, and Vamana, show just a little bit under that. Then the others of the 21, then from the Vaibhava will be, quite great excellences. Then the Prabhava will be less than that. And of that, then the ones who are the second type, who are like the sages in that, will show more. And those in the first type will show a little bit less. Then the Avesha, then they are Jivas. So how much power they have, that's up to the Lord. But in these others, the Prabhava, Vaibhava, and Paravasta, they'll all be Vishnu Tattva, no? So like our Vyasadeva will be a Prabhava, because he'll be Vishnu Tattva. While in the other Kali Yugas, he'll be an Avesha. He'll be a Jiva. Just like Lord Chaitanya is always a Jiva, but then when Swami Krishna comes, then it's some extent. So yeah. Vyas and Lord Chaitanya, that's why he's known as Triyuga. He doesn't appear in Kali Yuga, means as Vishnu Tattva. He only does through his Avesha manifestations. But in this time, when Krishna comes himself personally, then he also comes personally as Lord Chaitanya and as Lord Ramachandra. Okay, and this and that, then Krishna is the most, because he has the 64 qualities that the others don't have. Anucheda 6. Speaking of the avatars in detail, Sutta enumerates in 20 verses the appearance of the original form and the expansions in order to say that they are one. Saeva pratamam deva kaumaram sargam ashrita. Chara chara duscharam brahma brahmacharyam akanditam. Garbhodakshaya Vishnu first made his appearance in the Kumaras. Becoming brahmanas, they undertook continuous severe vows of brahmacharya. Srimad Bhagavatam 136, footnote 5. The words first, second, etc. in the Bhagavatam are for enumeration only, and not to indicate the actual order of their appearance. Lagu Bhagavatam Rita, chapter 3, text 2. There might be some of them, they are in somewhat an order is set, but here it's not about that. He's just listing. Udriti, Srila Prabhupada. The creation of the material world is effected, maintained, and then again annihilated at certain intervals. So there are different names of the creation in terms of the particular types of Brahma, the father of the living beings in the creation. The Kumaras, as above mentioned, appeared in the Kumara creation of the material world. And to teach us the process of Brahman realization, they underwent a severe type of disciplinary action as bachelors. These Kumaras are empowered incarnations. And before executing the severe type of disciplinary actions, all of them became qualified Brahmins. This example suggests that one must first acquire the qualifications of a Brahmana, not simply by birth, but also by quality. And then one can undergo the process of Brahman realization. Srimad Bhagavatam 136, purport. Right? Because understand Brahman, you have to have the Brahminical qualification. Otherwise, then what's the meaning? Right? Like that. So that's why then... how someone has that, we can see here is they're an incarnation of the Lord. But someone would have to perform austerities, you know, and have that determination. Where would that come from? That would come from lifetimes of being focused in that way. So how often is that? Right? And so for the devotees, then developing this brahminical qualification comes because of their interest in Krishna, interest in chanting the holy name. So because of that, then the brahminical qualities naturally come. Because he's the supreme Brahman, you're interested in him, therefore you're dealing with the Brahman platform, then you become qualified as a Brahman. So for devotees, everyone you're dealing is the brahminical culture. Right? So the interactions, the etiquette is all, it doesn't matter what someone's background is. Because here it's a matter of everyone's given up in the proper, you know, how you say, in the full, you know, manifestation of the Vaishnava culture, everyone's given up the concept, the bodily concept and the upadis. Doesn't mean they don't work in those areas, but they've given up the identity. So everyone identifies as servant of the Lord. So then as servant of the Lord, then they are all serving the Lord. And so that way, then that's where real equality comes from, is giving up upadis. If you're maintaining upadis and basing things on upadis, then it can't create the equality. So therefore, even in the modern context, we're just talking about devotees here, then when they give up these identities, then it's your surrender to Krishna. Whatever ashram or varna you happen to be situated in, that doesn't matter as far as you know, being absorbed in devotional service. And so there's an equality there. But everyone will perform their duties, and that's how you have the nice social environment, and that's how you have all the wonderful arrangements and all that are there amongst the devotees. Does that make sense? Yeah, it's like you see Raghunath Das as in family life. Then he's arranging the Chiradoi Utsav. He's arranging, you know, gifts for all the Vaishnavas that are there and the Lord, and working out so many nice details. Right? Then as he's transitioning, means he's taken up the sannyas, but he has facility. Then he's still kind of making some small arrangements. But at some point, then he gives that up and he makes no arrangements. And so he's not arranged. But we see that Shivananda Sen and Raghava Pandit, they're still making those kind of arrangements because they're still as grihasthas. Does that make sense? But as far as the devotional, it doesn't matter. So that's the whole thing, is that these things are just duties. You know, it's just like, okay, who's peeling potatoes? Who's cutting tomatoes? You know, who's frying the eggplant? It's not an upadi. It's just somebody's doing that. These things need to be done. Someone's doing. One has an ability in those things, so one uses that for Krishna service. But you don't make a distinction. They're all cooks. So that's the whole point. The upadi. While the modern, you see, the modern, even though they talk equality, they very much use upadis. You know, black and white and Asian and this and that. Their equality is based on them only exclusively talking about upadis. So if you look at it, those that work in the field, and let's say someone who comes from one of these so-called difficult social positions, they make the point that one of the biggest difficulties is that people make the distinction of these positions. If you're just all people, then it doesn't matter if you're black or white. Right? So, therefore, they don't make the distinction, the people they work with don't make the distinction, and depending upon your work, they become successful and that in their life. Now you have this whole political move coming along that very much points out about black and white and how blacks can't get anywhere because of the whites. But then the problem comes is that you brought back the upadis that were, you know, the big problem 150 years ago. And so therefore then, in the name of not being racist, you're the most racist because you're categorizing everybody according to race rather than saying, no, the humans, and this is the qualifications, who has those qualifications, then does these work, and who doesn't have but has an interest, then here are the facilities to get trained. So there's no focus on that. There's only focus on there's black and there's white, and then there's all this problem between them. So you don't have equality, even in the modern thing. You know, even the devotees may talk about these things. But they base it all on the upadis. And so therefore you can't have equality. So that's Maya's trick, is that you think it's about equality, but it's not. It's about upadis. So in the same way, oh, we're trying to create a universal thing, you know, we're Westerners, so we have to... It's based on an upadi. It cannot be universal. Yes?
Yesterday, somehow or other, this topic came up, and we discussed with the students, and, you know, like the audience, one is against, one is pro. It basically breaks into two camps, and...
Then people start getting up and going to the other side.
No, not okay. That far. But it was just very short, maybe 3 minutes.
Okay.
You know, it just came like a day. And it just faded away.
Yeah.
But then the question, the good question was asked, you know, but then what is the solution? So we thought, and then we came to a conclusion that when we discuss absolute truth, this division into groups doesn't happen because it's unifying principle.
Right.
But if we discuss any relative truth, then we have division. So that, the solution was to discuss Krishna as an absolute principle, and then you know within that we can see, you know, who is doing what service and this and that, but it's not duality, it's variety.
Right. Yes.
So that is the unifying. Otherwise, immediately, because we were discussing Lagu Bhagavatamrita, you know, Vishnu Tattva, Taratamya, you know, the hierarchy and like that, and then as soon as this something came out, we dropped on the mundane like pranamoya level, and pranamoya, but lower pranamoya, not higher pranamoya.
It's like the bungee cord, when you're at the bottom, your nose is this far from the ground.
Yes, exactly.
That much until it's anamoya,
Yeah. It's almost touching, but it's just something, somehow we hang in there.
Yeah. But Prabhupada was just mentioning this morning, I think it was a talk in, was it Hawaii? Maybe. So he was talking about the material world, everything's relative. And he was saying that Einstein's principle of relativity, everything, you call it big. Actually, he was making the point is, it must have been Hawaii, because he was talking about the Pacific Ocean. So of all of our seven oceans, the Pacific is the biggest. Like that. And so then... he was talking about, we'll say that's big, but you know, it's a small thing. There's thousands of all these floating around in the universe. Everybody's got them, and these are small, right? You know, this is on our part. What about all the ones around the other parts of Bhumandala, even there? They're so much bigger. And so he was making the point, it's all relative. We think it's big, so for us it's in reality it's big, but for someone else it's small. So that's the thing, in the material world everything is relative. So unless you compare it to the absolute, you can't deal. So we'll take it, oh, we're Westerners. But when we say we're Westerners, what do we mean by that? Are we saying that, oh, we're Panchama, we're so low class and sinful that we can't perform all these duties and all that? Or we're saying it with a bit of an air excellence that, you know, we're Westerners. We don't need to do these. We just use our intelligence and we get everything done because we're so clever and we have our technology and our drive. You know, so it's even looked at as a what do you call it? Relative. You know, so we're seeing ourselves and then everybody else. But I think when the Europeans first kind of went to Japan or over in China, they couldn't tolerate them because they never took bath. You know, the Japanese, China, as Asians took bath every day. These guys, you know, have been on a boat for the last 6 months and never, you know, even they come off the boat, it's not like first thing, okay, I can take a bath. No, they wouldn't even bother with it. You know? So they're just thinking, these guys are like pigs, you know. But, you know, sophisticated pigs, but, you know, pigs nonetheless. So everything's relative. So like you said, unless you bring it in context of Krishna, then it will always be relative truth. And then we can argue all day. Because relative means is this and that, rather than thought that was a very good point. Here it's relative, there it's variety.
Yeah. The difficulty is that when even while discussing Bhagavatam, when you're trying to discuss absolute truth, not so many are interested. But as soon as you bring relativity, everybody is like very focused and asking questions. And yes. Relative question to the relative
situations.
Yeah.
And generally about themselves.
Of course.
Yeah.
So this is the difficulty. Like Srila Prabhupada asked, what is the difficulty? This is the difficulty. And in absolute truths, not so many are interested. But relative truths, most everybody, you just have to see what relative they're interested in.
Yes.
Whether it's this relative, like you're saying, Western or Asian or Russian, or is it social issues, or is it
economic
health issues,
yeah,
or
justice. The climate, it's all relative, yeah. Well, that's what I noticed in the first years of the course, is that the points where it's just like I noticed at some point I was doing a similar classes with the boys, and then with adults. So I noticed with the boys, you have this one point, and you go through it in 5 minutes. But in the scenario with the adults, it would be 2 weeks, because of the issues and all that. And so, yeah. And then as time goes, you get, you know, it seems to be it does okay through the first six cantos of Bhagavatam. You know, so the first 6 years you can, you know, it's okay. But then after that it starts to lose some. Because then Prahlad Maharshi, then the focus is on the pure devotional service. And you see the relative aspect only has a value in context of the absolute. So that would be another way you can approach the aspect that Bhaktivinoda Thakur was discussing of the firm faith, or the Drijavrata, you know, is that surrender to the Lord, because you don't see any relative truth having any value on its own, and that the relative truths cannot get you devotional service. Only bhakti can get you devotional service. But relative truths that have can be engaged nicely, you know, progressively in Krishna service, then they're of value. But that's all they are, is of value. You know, their only value is that. Their relation, you know, in other words, they're relative compared to this or that, so only when they're related to the absolute, then they actually take on an absolute nature, then they become a value.
Another point I was thinking also about bodies is, you know, there's a Rupa Goswami quotes that famous verse, the Sarvabhadi which is another definition of pure devotional service.
Mm-hmm.
So many devotees actually come into Krishna consciousness, they think that they change their upadis.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look closely, they aren't.
Mm-hmm.
Because the difficulty is that in the material world it's quite obvious, but in devotional service it's not that obvious.
Mm.
So if in material world I was, you know, doing something,
mm-hmm.
then we can spiritualize that action,
mm-hmm.
for Krishna and connect it.
Mm-hmm.
But the identity didn't change much, and especially when the leadership, encourages devotees to have those strong upadis, saying that if it is a spiritual upadi, which it isn't, so that upadi actually just, it just shifted a little bit.
But become purified, you could say.
Yeah, but it's not a change of Na and Krishna Das. No, I'm just doing something for Krishna, but my upadi remains a little better, a little purified, but didn't change much. And with this illusion, people remain for years. And if you ask them, they, of course, I am like that. It's all connected, which is not necessary.
Oh, yes. That's a very, very nice. Because here it is, the upadi doesn't, means we give up the upadi, but it's not that the body and mind and that don't have the same nature. It's just like, let us say for, how would you say? Someone, let's say, has a fancy car. And for the friends they move with, it's their identity. And then with others, it's their identity, they're the cool dude with this car, then everything. But now if they become a devotee, then the car doesn't change. It's not that, the Maserati turned into a Fiat 500 or something. Right? But it still stayed, but now it's not an identity. Now it's just a car that gets them from point A to point B. And if it's a good car for doing that, for doing a service, then it remains. But if he finds out it's actually not so good because, there's too much difficulty, too many people around it, too many, he can't put anything in the boot. It's all these things. Then you might decide on a different car. So that's the point is that's why for the Vaishnava community, they still follow Varnashram because that's the scientific way of applying human life in a cooperative environment where you're dealing with the physical, the mental, the social, and the spiritual aspects, right? So that's, you require that, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Varnashram is the structure on which that Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha that are fit. So, means there is the aspect that whatever you're doing has to be uplifting, so it has to be able to be used in spirit, in the spiritual consciousness. So, but Vedic culture does that. Western culture does not do that. They don't make a distinction between religious and spiritual.
Yeah.
And even they don't really make a difference, a distinction between religious and social. And even in the social, you don't make so much difference between the social and the physical. So it's more mental speculation. So that way they can speculate everywhere. It's not very scientific. So it's not that great. Some may say it doesn't matter. But it's not designed for use for humans. Right? So since you have to maintain your body, then Varnashram does that. Varnashram retains the body, the mind, the intellect, the spiritual elements, the social connections, all that. As Bhaktivinoda Thakur points out, is if you're mentally going crazy, how do you be absorbed in your chanting? Or if you're so sick you can't do things, then you do. But it only has value in as much as it helps you be Krishna conscious. Right? It's not that, and then make the health or these other things more prominent. Oh, yes, see, we need psychology, but are they bringing you to using your mind in Krishna's service? Or are they bringing you to the point where using your mind for sense gratification? Oh, the reason you're going nuts is because you're getting into the spiritual and not addressing your senses and your mind and your emotions and your feelings. rather than you're not seeing how those emotions and all that and senses connect to Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? Like, where's the psychologist or that talks like that? You know, because that's actually the point. So they'll bring in the point of that they can function in a material society, but not necessarily in a spiritual. So they're not even using spiritual psychology. You know? So all these things are necessary. But the point is that you don't have to have an identity with them to use them. You don't have to identify with your screwdriver to use it or with a hammer to use it. Right? That's the whole thing. But we're so used to that is that it's me, you know, so therefore I'm the dude with the hammer, you know. Right? They even made a song about that, right? Hammering in the morning, hammering in the evening, right? Yeah, like that. So I think the Beatles even made a song about him. Huh? Maxwell? Yeah. So, you know, so it becomes even potty. But the point is in the Vedic, it's there. So this whole thing is no. It's a lower thing. We're above. No, it's the avidya shakti tricks us, and it's reversed. It's actually, we're too absorbed in upadis, we can't function without the material upadis. We can't function just with, I'm servant of Krishna. Because if I'm servant of Krishna, then we're still going to use the material upadi of the so-called spiritual, that, or the economic, that kind of combination, where, okay, so if I'm only spiritual, I'm not the body, therefore I don't have to take care of any responsibilities with the body. I reject everything that has to do with the body and everything like that. At the same time, going on and doing whatever you like. So you just keep the parts you like because you don't notice those. And the parts you don't like, you go, oh, I don't like this. This is the body. Well, the parts I like, I identify with so much I don't even notice that I'm doing them. So it's a lack of qualification that the Varnashram system is more difficult to use. Not that it's, we're Vaishnavas, it's lower than us. It's that, yes, we're Vaishnavas, but one has to remember we're sadhakas. And so as sadhakas, we're not on the pure platform. And so therefore, without it means, if we're talking communities, then we would have to use Varnashram. Otherwise, how do you have a community? That's like saying, we're going to have a rally, but we're not talking about cars. We don't believe in cars, but we're going to have a rally. You know, what are you going to use? Ostriches, or you know, it's like a, you know, maybe if you're in Australia, you could do that. Emus, they're big, they're good. Even best would have been what do you call it? Moas. Moa looks like an ostrich. Or that, but they would be as tall as the roof here. Who knows how fast you could go in one of those? You know, show up with one of those at an ostrich race, you know, you're going to win every time. There aren't any anymore. The Maoris? No, the Moa Hutas, who lived in New Zealand, they, part of their culture is they ate the Moas. The guys who ate them were the Moa. But, you know, they would, you know, it would be balanced, you know, like the American Indian and the bisons. But then, at one point, the Maoris came along. And they didn't bother with the Moas. They ate the Moa Hutas. And I guess when they were gone, they ate the Moas, and now there aren't anymore. Because they had a thing, I think it's a Polynesian thing, that when you defeat the other tribe, then you eat them.
To get that,
because they were fierce, you know. So we want their shakti, so you eat them.
Only those who are warriors. Only those who are very fierce and respected.
Yes. But in any case, you know, I think it's just it might be a New Zealand joke about the, you know, that the Maoris ate the Moa Hutas, but it wasn't specifically went out hunting them to eat them. They just in the wars they ended up like that. Only the most fierce, yeah. The other guys that. Yes.
I have a friend, and we shared some ideas, and then he mentioned something very interesting. is that in Krishna consciousness, we don't pay, usually we don't pay people salaries, you know, devotees for their service.
Yeah.
But to inspire them, we have to increase their upadis, which is, you know, basically mundane. And then you have to glorify those upadis.
Mm-hmm.
But the difficulty we've noticed is that when those upadis, because you have to give them up, that's sarvopadi nikrutam, mm-hmm. It's just like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's a law of nature. So when those upadis are gone, suddenly there's an identity crisis.
Yes.
And like you mentioned, the devotional identity, it's very undeveloped.
Yes.
So person can't actually function on that identity.
Yes.
And I know so many, you know, people, you know, those who have quite high position in the society, when that position is gone, people just go into black dark, you know, it's like,
yeah.
And it's very problematic, actually.
Yes, but so then when there must be some kind of method, or, you know, that you could go about this. So that means it's a matter of someone being trained and to, you know, understand what the conditioning is, what they have to work with. You know, what's of value, at least right now. It might be other things that are of value, but not now. You know, it's like you can do certain things, but if those are a problem for you, you don't use those now. You use the ones that won't create a trouble for you now. And as you purify, get purified, you can start to include more and more of you know, your abilities. But at the same time, as it's always being pointed out, that we're not the doer, we're simply an instrument. These are Krishna's potencies, and we have the facility for those potencies to be used. And so we are doing, and then Krishna gives the results. So we try to do something nice with these facilities that Krishna's given for Krishna's pleasure. And then Krishna being pleased, then, you know, we get a nice result, and, you know, he reciprocates us on the devotional platform, and we advance devotionally. So then it's always aware of what is the abilities, but without the designation, you know, and we constantly see when the designation comes up, then again, no, we're not that, but it's not that we don't use that. So we've used the Mayavadi system of, if we're not using the upadis, we're not using any of the things. And then we replace it with the modern, maybe with corporate, right? You know, instead of being, you know, let's say, administrative or economic like that, then we're corporate. Instead of the bureaucratic, we're professionals. Instead of the brahminical, then we're academics. So they simply have gone back to the mundane ones from their own background. Because if they're not from that background, you can only relate with those ones that you have a nature in. So even if you're talking corporate, it's not that you are the corporate person. You may be the shudra that the corporate engages, therefore the professional. So when they're talking about being professionals, much of the time they're pointing towards the dvija professionals, but they're actually training everyone as shudra professionals. And so then there's a bigger illusion there, because you think you're one thing and you're not, and you try to, you know, lead in all these things, they will create problems. So the point is if we accept the whole principle, then in accepting it, then we can start to learn. If you can't, just like, if you're an atheist, you can't know God. As soon as you are open to the idea that there is God, then you can start to learn about God. But if you're opposed to Varnashram, you can't learn about Varnashram. You can't use it. You can't understand it. So for us, it is it's the human social tool. So the upadis then are what is beyond, means we don't identify with them. But it's not that we don't use them.
Yeah.
You know, so that's the whole thing. So, yes, there may be some very nice tricks out there. There's some good Vaishyas, some good Brahmas, some good writers, some good this and that. it makes some very nice, Prabhupada would quote from them, you know. But then, but it's just because Prabhupada quotes, books are the basis, you know, what is it?
Preaching is the essence.
Books are the basis, preaching is the essence, utility is the principle, purity is the fourth. Sorry?
Purity is not the strength.
No, it's the fourth. It's also very interesting. When you change the order, you actually change its effect. Because if books are the basis, then you know everything has to go back to the books. So preaching is the essence, means out of the books, whatever you're going to do, the preaching has to be there. Utility is the principle, how you're going to preach, how you're going to do whatever is available, how will you be able to do that? Utility is the principle, because purity is the force. So because of purity, then you can understand, you accept the books, you understand the essence, and you can use anything in Krishna's service. So does that mean now then Buddhism is cool? No, it means that quote is nice. So yes, in this big fat book here, the self-help book, there's two or three quotes that are very good. Great, use them. But the rest of it, what do you need for? You know? So that's the point is that if it's great, fine. We don't have a problem. But it actually has to be useful. And, you know, see it in the context of you know, what we're given by Krishna and the Acharyas. Then it works very nicely. Then this relativity can be properly engaged. Otherwise, then we reject the Varnashram, which is actually how relativity can be connected to the spiritual, I mean transcendental, and be another aspect of variety in the Vaishnava culture. And we give that up, then we accept the modern upadis, the relativity of the modern world and its upadis, and then try to, you know, through some fluff, try to say that it's spiritual. So any opposition to it, then political, social points will be used to defeat the argument rather than actual logic and science. So that's the Varnashram, scientific. This other stuff is sentiment. It's just attachment according to what's there. Because who's speaking corporate? Those from a corporate background. Who's speaking academic? Those from an academic background, or at least to value it. You know what I'm saying? You know, who's talking about, you know, me and this and that? Those from that background. And those who are from a government background, stay out of the way. Because all this other stuff is useless. And those who are interested in pure love, they stay out of the way. And same time, guys who can actually make money stay out of the way. So, you know, it's just whoever can actually do something, they stay out of the way, because all this discussion is not actually that useful. You may have elements that are bona fide, but it's not put together in a way that you can actually apply it. So,
if we take Varnas, then this kind of discussion doesn't bring knowledge, doesn't bring influence, doesn't bring money, so it's for shudras.
Yeah,
they get it,
and you don't even get fame out of it. Yeah, that's it. And all you can do is claim, well, I've been around longer, I'm more senior to you. So they're using the shudra thing to establish their authority. Yeah, no, it's useless. Yeah, it's for shudras, and even that, it's, yeah. Okay, so here is the example suggests that one must first acquire the qualifications of a brahmana, not simply by birth, but also by quality. Then one can undergo the process of brahman realization. And for us, brahman realization is just, we become aware that everything's Krishna, Krishna is everything. Right? Well, actually, it would be better to say everything is Krishna, but Krishna is separate. The Chinta Beta Beta Tattva. You don't use it the other way. That's where the problems come up. Everything is Krishna because it's all his energy. But when you say Krishna is everything, that's then where the problem comes up. Then you can worship anything. So that's when it becomes impersonal. when we decide to worship this might because it's Krishna, then we have a problem. But because it's Krishna's energy, we deal with it properly. So, yeah. Deva refers to the Purusha who was described as having 1,000 feet and who lies on the water. This is in agreement with the conclusion. Yes, yes, we did. Yes, I just mentioned I just reread the last sentence. But that was because I was thinking, how did we get into this? And then I looked and said, oh, because we got into the relativity, and the relativity came from the Brahminical, and therefore all Vaishnavas are Brahmins. And from that we got down into the issues. Yes. This is an agreement with the conclusion. Upa samhara ete chamsa kalapumsa. These are amshas and kalas of the Purusha. Kumaram refers to the four Kumaras. Brahma means becoming Brahmanas. Oh, Brahma. Yeah. Udriti. Srila Rupa Goswami states the following in Lagu Bhagavatamrita. This avatar is actually four persons, but is considered as one by the devotees. The word sana, ancient, is added to the word chatur, four, to make chatusana, four ancient ones. They appeared in this world in order to preach bhakti and pure knowledge. They have the appearance of 5-year-old boys, are golden in complexion, and were born from Brahma.
Yeah.
Okay. Lagu Bhagavatamrita, chapter 3, text 3-5. The glories of Sanat Kumara and his brothers are described in the second canto of Bhagavatam. Lord Brahma said, to create different planetary systems, I had to undergo austerities and penance. And the Lord, thus being pleased with me, incarnated in four sanas, Sanaka, Sanat Kumara, Sanandana, and Sanatana. In the previous creation, the spiritual truth was devastated. But the four sanas explained it so nicely that the truth at once became clearly perceived by the sages. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.7.5. So this would be, then it was mentioned before about the kalpa of the Kumaras, and that would mean when they appeared. You know? Or at least when they... Yes. And so you have the different kalpas, the different days of Brahma. So then they have a major flavor, because at the end, during the night... At the end of the day, then everything means the universe inside is basically destroyed. The universe still remains, but everything becomes wound back up. I think into the lotus flower like this, and so only Lord Brahma and the residents of Brahmaloka. So that'll include the Pitris because they come up from. So anyone in Maharjana Tapa and Satyalokas, they all go up to Satyaloka because. The Satyaloka, meaning all four planetary systems remain, but it can become a little bit uncomfortable on, I think, Mahar is the bottom one. It becomes too hot. So then they may go up to Jana, or depending on means. During the days, once they go up to there, but at the night one, they'll go up to Satya. Yes?
So can we say that the Kumaras, they stand for the lifetime of Lord Brahma?
Yes. Lord Brahma, the Prajapatis, they're for the life. Like they're Chiranji, you know. Like, a few people are like that. I think, what is it? Maitreya? Is it Maitreya? No, Markandeya. Markandeya is like that. The bear, Jambavan, he's like that. I think Hanuman, Garuda, they're all Chiranji. Yeah. So. Therefore, then, in this time, then the Kumaras, then they came, and in the morning, then they explained everything to the sages, because otherwise the knowledge becomes lost during the night, becomes manifest again. So the aspect of manifesting of the knowledge, and that's it's a very nice thing, because then it's being a process, then it's something that it can be done, you know, and it has a very a taste and everything. So therefore, then the devotees... The devotees, the Lord then likes going through, you know, that these things are again revealed. Vriti, having described the appearance of the four Kumaras, who belong to the Avesha Rupa group of expansion, empowered with jnana. Next, the appearance of Lord Varahadev is discussed. Dvitiyam tu bhava yasya rasatala gatam mahim udharishyan nupadatta yagyesha sau karam vabhu. Secondly, the Lord of Sacrifice, lifting up the earth from rasatala for its welfare, took the form of a boar. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.37 Udhriti, Srila Prabhupada. The indication is that for each and every incarnation of the personality of Godhead, the particular function executed is also mentioned. There cannot be any incarnation without a particular function. And such functions are always extraordinary. They are impossible for any living being to perform. Right? So it doesn't mention that the Lord will come with frizzy hair and he'll be able to, you know, by rubbing his fingers in front of you, drop ash into your hand. It's not mentioned in scripture. So we can understand that's not an incarnation.
So it's
not that problem? No, it's not. One may say, well, what about Vibhuti? Vibhuti. He's giving Vibhuti. Right? You know. Yeah. Vibhuti Prakash. Okay. The incarnation of the boar was to take the earth out of Pluto's region of filthy water. Picking up something from a filthy place is done by a boar, and the all-powerful personality of Godhead displayed this wonder to the Asuras, who had hidden the earth in such a filthy place. There is nothing impossible for the personality of Godhead, and although he played the part of a boar, by the devotees he is worshipped, staying always in transcendence. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.37, purport.
Pluto's region?
Yeah. So it's a hellish region. Because they always connect Pluto with hell. That's one of the things. But you also have it where it goes out this way. And so it's beyond the Loka mountains. So that's why they're not considered important in the Vedic astrology. That and I think Pluto, Uranus, Neptune, they don't count them. Even though they may be there, they're too far away, they have no influence. Like that. The modern gets right into that, but then the problem is it's going to be in one place for, I think it takes 236 years or something for Uranus to go around, or like that, one of them. And so then, you know, what's the big deal? Why bring it up? You know.
Because of it's too far.
It's too far. It's so slow, but it's also too far.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, what's the big deal? They always talk about it. But the thing is it's always going to be there. And it's so far away, how much influence can it have? You know? Mm-hmm. So that's why then, like, planets, when they're in retrograde, they're stronger because they're closer. So then, fun fact, Jupiter is there with Saturn. And they were, you know, all this difficulty was coming up recently. And then, I think on 28th of July, then Jupiter went out of the constellation, whatever it was. And so you notice immediately things started getting better. But then also, very recently, it was kind of like it came back again. It's because it went into retrograde.
Right.
So it's actually stronger for a short time, and then in November it'll go out of that again, and then it'll be... So, you know, it never... But retrograde means it's closer to the... planet. It means if you have the earth here and it's going around, you know, like that, when it goes down here, it becomes strong, but then when it goes like this, it's also. So that point of where it's just coming in and out of retrograde is the closest. Then it goes out because they all go like this. Yeah, it means we're taking it that they're going like this, you know, it means for when they're going like this around the sun, but and the earth is moving. But if you take that, if they're going around the sun, how is that in comparison to the earth? That's what it is. So the path of the planets looks like, you know, when you have those funny little things and you put your pen and you make those little flowers,
yeah.
That's how they look. Some of them are bigger, some of them are smaller, some of them are, you know, like that. If they're slower, then there'll be, you know, less of them. If they're quicker, you know, say like Mercury, it goes in like this. You know, so that retrograde means means when it's becoming really strong. So when it's coming in, it gets really close. But there's a point there. You know, when it's coming in, that it starts to get strong, and then it gets down to here, and then it goes backwards. It's actually, you call it from here, you're calling it retrograde, because it should be going forward, but it's going backwards until it gets to here, and then at this point it starts forward again. So this place in the whole retrograde, that's the strongest, because it has the most influence, because it's closer.
So we had it for 2 years?
No, it was just in the sign. Says during this, I think, I'm not sure when it was, maybe in September, end of September, then October, and I'm not sure when in November, Jupiter's in retrograde. So then you see the same stupidity going on. Yeah, I mean, it's just a matter of how stupid, more stupid, most stupid.
Volume.
Yeah, volume, that's all. Yeah. Asya bhavaya means for the welfare of the earth. Sarva sambhadini. The earth was raised up twice. They are described together since the pastime is the same. Right? So then you have Svetavaraha and the, I'm not sure if he has a name, when he's the red color. So he's red color and white color, but they're described as one. Like that. So you might take, yeah. At the beginning of Swayambhuva Manvantara, when the earth was submerged, Varaha lifted it up. Varaha fought with Hiranyaksha, the son of Diti, born of Daksha, who appeared during the sixth Manvantara. He then raised the earth, which was submerged. The first event is also described in another Purana, with Vidher, Granad, Ante, Nirad. Appearing from the nose of Brahma, he delivered the earth from the water. Sometimes he has four legs, and sometimes he is half human. So that's why when you have him with Varaha, he's half human, or you have him where he's fully boar, they're both correct.
He was born of Daksha? Diti and Vakaram? The whole story.
Cool. No, Diti is born of Daksha. But Diti is then married to...
Oh, Diti born of Daksha. I thought that he was born of Diti and of Daksha.
Yeah, well, it's always nice, because the Sanskrit will say it like this and you know what it means, because it goes very nicely. But when you take it into, let's say, like this English, unless you make some adjustments. That's why Prabhupada was so expert, is that his translations mean what they mean in English. While others do it and it's kind of like, what planet are they coming from? Where they? No, no, but that's what the Sanskrit says. No, that's what Monier Williams says. That's not what Sanskrit says.
It's very technical.
Yes, that's the thing, is that you can have a sentence inside a sentence inside a sentence in Sanskrit, and it so nicely goes, but when you put it into English, you really have to adjust it around, change the orders, put in huge amounts of punctuation to deal with those sentences.
Yeah, because it says the son of Diti born of Daksha means...
Yes, yeah. But it's... Varaha fought with Hiranyaksha, the son of Diti. You know, then she was the daughter of Daksha. That's what it should say. But people say, no, but it didn't use the word daughter. But she is born from Daksha, right? So is, you know, are we going non-binary here or something? You know, so then she's the daughter. You know, so then you do like that, then it makes it clear. So for some it's about the translation, for some it's about the clarity. You know. And for some it's just a hobby. You know. Like that. Yeah. Okay, so he sees there's the one where he comes out of the nose of Brahma, so that's one. And then the other one, you know, when he fought with Hiranyaksha. So those two are put together. Prabhupada also mentions that, I think, in the purport. It mentions about that. Sometimes he is black and sometimes he is white. The second appearance and submersion of the earth happened in the beginning of the sixth Manvantara, when the devatas were created, including Daksha, whose daughter was Diti. She gave birth to Hiranyaksha. Right. So it seems that it happened twice. It fell down there. So one time in one of them, he fights with Hiranyaksha. And another one appears he didn't.
It's just the beginning of the creation.
Okay.
Swayam Bhu Manus.
Okay.
This is in the last previous, the sixth Manvantara.
Okay. Yeah, because you also have a lot of things happening in the sixth. Because you also have that thing where Daksha's reborn. I can't remember who his father is. Because I'm not sure, maybe his wife got tired of the goat head or something. So, you know, like, you know, so then he takes birth, remember, and he does all those austerities and all that, and the Chakshusa Manu, and then he sees the Lord, and then the Hamsaguya prayers are offered like that. So that'll be different from where the right in the beginning, where he's such a smarta, you know, he gets his head, you know, removed by Virabhadra. So I guess after, you know, six Manvantaras, he has a little bit of, you know, a little bit more realization or something. Mm-hmm. At the same, yeah.
Pacheta section, I thought.
Pachetas.
His son's
of. Oh, he's the son of the Pachetas, okay.
His son's of.
Yeah. He who, inspired by the Lord, created the desired progeny at the time of Chakshusha Manvantara, when the previous creation had been destroyed by time, is known as Daksha. Srimad Bhagavatam 4:30-49. Udriti. Srila Rupa Goswami states the following in Laghu Bhagavatamrita. It is mentioned in the Matsya Purana that there was a pralaya during Swayambhuva Manu's reign because of a curse of a sage upon Swayambhuva. Laghu Bhagavatamrita, chapter 3, text 18. But the earth does not get submerged in water except at final devastation. Thus, why did Varaha appear? Because the earth was not submerged during Swayambhuva's reign. This verse answers, because of the curse of Agastya upon Swayambhuva, there was a devastation during his period. At that time, Varaha appeared to lift the earth, which was submerged. This is mentioned in the Matsya Purana. It is mentioned in the Vishnu Dharmottara that by the will of the Lord, there was a sudden deluge during the reign of Chakshusha Manu. Laghu Bhagavatamrita, chapter 3, text 19. Why was there a devastation submerging the earth during Chakshusha Manu's reign? This verse answers, by the will of the Lord, there was a sudden flood of water during Chakshusha Manu's reign. Vra appeared at that time to lift the earth up, which had become submerged and also killed Hiranyaksha. This is explained in the Vishnu Dharmottara. One may consult these two works for further information. So that's why, remember, there was a discussion on the of the water coming up and how much it was affecting the earth. And then there... Because the thing was, is it could happen at the end of the cycle of the four yugas, but generally it mentions it happens at the end of the Manvantara. You know, that's why they're saying, Manu's reigning, why is this happening? And so then it mentions that it generally happens there, but it can happen in between. So here's two instances of it happening in between. That it did happen, you can say it happens, but so far in 151 trillion years, then we've only gotten... It seems two instances of this. You know, unless this happens every day of Brahma like this, but then you're going to have two of them in a day. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So you have the regular scheduled one, which would be at the end of the Manvantara, because then there's going to be the partial devastation up to the earth, or even maybe up to the heavenly planets. So then there'll be something like that. And that's when the Prajapatis will, you know, they move up to the next planet. But then when you have the end of Brahma's day, after 1,000 cycles, then I think much more is devastated. And then in the morning he recreates all that again. Riti. Next, the appearance of Narad Muni, who belongs to the Avesha Rupa group of expansion, empowered with bhakti, is discussed. Right, so the Kumaras were Avesha, then they're empowered with jnana, right? So they taught the sages and all that. And then Narad, he's Avesha, he's empowered with bhakti, so he can describe bhakti. So if he describes this is what is bhakti, that's to be taken as authority. Varaha would have been, you know, the group. He's in the what is it, Vaibhava?
Yeah.
He's in the Vaibhava, in excellences. Anucheda 8. Tritiyam rishi sargam vai devar shitvam upetyasa tantaram satvatam acheshta naishkarmyam karmanam yata. The Lord, making his appearance among the sages as Narada, produced the Pancharatra scriptures from which one learns how devotional activities free one from the bondage of karma. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.3.8 Udriti, Srila Prabhupada. The great sage Narada, the great Rishi Narada, who is an empowered incarnation of the personality of Godhead, propagates devotional service all over the universe. All great devotees of the Lord all over the universe and in different planets and species of life are his disciples. Srila Vyasadeva, the compiler of the Srimad Bhagavatam, yeah, planets and species. So humans and sages all over the universe, but also some animals are his disciples. You know, like we hear about the one about the, what do you call it, the king cobra, like that. So there's different human animals are his disciples, so. Srila Vyasadeva, the compiler of the Srimad Bhagavatam, is also one of his disciples. Narada is the author of Narada Pancharatra, which is the exposition of the Vedas, particularly for the devotional service of the Lord. Right, so you take from the Vedas all the details that are specifically on devotional service. You know, worship of Vishnu and devotional, anything connected, that becomes the Pancharatra. This Narada Pancharatra trains the karmis, or the fruitive workers, to achieve liberation from the bondage of fruitive work. The conditioned souls are mostly attracted by fruitive work because they want to enjoy life by the sweat of their own brows. The whole universe is full of fruitive workers in all species of life. The fruitive works include all kinds of economic development plans. But the law of nature provides that every action has its resultant reaction, and the performer of the work is bound by such reactions, good or bad. The reaction of good work is comparative material prosperity, whereas the reaction of bad work is comparative material distress. But again, it's relative, because what you call good for one person, someone else will call bad. Like that. But material conditions, either in so-called happiness or in so-called distress, are all meant ultimately for distress only. Like we'll say so-called happiness, but it's distress. But here he's pointing out, no, it's also so-called distress. Like that. They're both all meant for ultimately for distress only. Foolish materialists have no information of how to attain eternal happiness in the unconditional state. Sri Narada informs these foolish fruitive workers how to realize the reality of happiness. He gives direction to the diseased men of the world how one's present engagement can lead one to the path of spiritual emancipation. The physician directs the patient to take treated milk in the form of curd for his sufferings from indigestion due to his taking another milk preparation. So the cause of the disease and the remedy of the disease may be the same. But it must be treated by an expert physician like Narada. Bhagavad Gita also gives the same solution of serving the Lord by the fruits of one's labor. That will lead one to the path of naishkarmya, or liberation. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.3.8, purport. So here is that you're using the same thing to cure the disease. But you have the material desire for material fruit of work. So under the direction of Narada, using the Pancharatra, you engage your body, mind, and words in the Lord's service through these particular activities. And then that clears one of the material contamination. Right? Does that make sense? So just in context of previous discussion, if some say we tried Varnashram, it didn't work, but then the point is if you have to try it under the direction of an expert physician. So as Srimad Prabhupada and the Acharyas give it to us, that's how it has to be used. Because if we use it the way they used it, it works very nice. And if we didn't get good results, that means we didn't use it the way they said. Becoming a sage Becoming Narada, Devarshi Tvam, he produced the Vaishnava, Sattvatam, Pancharatra scriptures, Tantram, from which Yata, the activities of Karmana, of devotees performing bhakti, which produced freedom from karma, being separated from karma, Naishkarmyam, by being free from the bondage of karma, is made clear. Right, so he's known for the Pancharatra and Naishkarmya, because the point of the using Pancharatra is Naishkarmya. And so that means also that in your duties, whatever it is, the Varnashram then becomes there, because you see he's one of the ones. We have Bhrigu Muni in the Manusamhita then speaking the Dharma Shastra. But we see in Bhagavatam, Narad Muni speaking the Dharma Shastra. Like that, you know, in the seventh canto, the Yudhishthira. So here's that Naishkarmi as you're trying to do. So you can say, oh, this is for the karmis, but karmi means the one who performs work and expects a result. Right? Because otherwise he did so many books and in the morning people said, yay, this many books, and then he's inspired, like you were saying before. Like that. So he's doing it because of that. And so, but he's doing it for the Lord, so therefore he'll get purified. But if he identifies with it and then becomes proud of it, then he'll have problems. You know, as he's saying here. So unless somebody's talking about that and training them in that, then you can get distracted and make it into an upadhi. But, you know, you expect something. So that's the whole thing, as we can say, is that that's the whole point. Till we're on the platform of pure devotional service, then these impurities of karma and jnana are there. So Narad Muni shows how to connect them to Krishna through the Pancharatra process.
Yeah, therefore, as you explained in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Raghunath Das practiced pure devotional service through renunciation, and he was welcomed by Mahaprabhu and his followers.
Mm-hmm.
And Shivananda Sena, he practiced pure devotional service through family life,
mm-hmm.
but he was welcomed in Mahaprabhu's society.
Yeah.
So the difficulty is to discriminate what is the principle and what is the detail.
Mm-hmm.
Because principle is usually one,
yes.
and details are many,
yes,
and they are
yes.
overwhelming. So most of the energy goes into figuring out details.
Yes.
But once you figure the principle, all the details are in place. But otherwise,
yes.
it's just chaos.
Yes, yes. Well, that was what you mentioned before, is that seeing everything, when you see it all in the absolute, because that's the thing, the details, if not seen in context of the absolute, become relative. See, is that the same details, we're talking about devotees and their pastimes, but we're not talking about the detail within the pastime in context of the pastime in serving the Lord. We're taking it on its own, that we can use it for discussion for our socio-political, economic, you know, kind of ideas. We forget its absolute connection. Therefore, then it becomes confusing. It becomes relative. So that the solution is always you have to bring it back to the absolute. Then all relativities have their natural place. Because even within relativities, that variety still has hierarchy. Of varieties, then there's still a difference. You know, there's, let's say, you know, there's ice cream, there's a rock, and there's a, you know, a raw potato. You know, it's variety, but there's a hierarchy there, right? Right. If you're going to eat it, there's going to be a hierarchy. If you're going to build a house, there's a different hierarchy. If you want to do farming, there's again a different hierarchy. Is that so like that? It's going to. Udriti. Srila Rupa Goswami states in Lagu Bhagavatamrita, chapter 3, text 6-8. The Lord took the form of a sage among the devatas. White like the moon, he appeared as the son of Brahma for spreading devotion to the Lord everywhere in the material world. Appearing in the first kalpa of Brahma's life, the Kumaras and Narada remain through all the kalpas of Brahma's life. So all of Brahma's sons, and from what I understand, the Prajapatis, the sons of those sons, mm-hmm. then they are all Chiranjeev. They last for Brahma's life. Like that. Because it means even now, you say when you say Gotra, that means which of the 21 Prajapatis your family line goes back to. So it's not that it changes in between. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? So that means they would always be there. Interesting, quite like the moon. Like that. It also says he has tawny hair.
Oh, Narada.
Narada, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Tawny hair means blonde.
Yeah. You know, I would say it's a, I'm not sure how blonde. I get the idea tawny is more like a, like what you call a dirty blonde.
Yeah.
You know, it's not white, that super, like that. Yeah, also. Kapila also has blonde hair.
Yes, because he looks very good because of that blonde.
Yeah. So Narad Muni and Kapila have blonde hair. And it appears that Narad Muni is very white.
Oh.
But he'll be the golden white, not the red white. We're the red white, you know, because if you look, we're red.
Pink, yeah.
Yeah, we're red. But you see, in India, those from like the Gaur Saraswat Brahmins and that, even the Saraswat, but the Gaur Saraswat especially, they are white, but it doesn't have the red. But it's not, it's not like they don't look like a, you know, a Transylvania white either. It's a very far out white. You look at them, you look at one of them, you think they're a Westerner, but at the same time as the features are Indian, they have the Indian ears, nose, and everything like that. But still, if you look under it, that's if you put them out in the, you know, outside, you know, where it's not freezing, you'll see the red. Because the red comes from the Kshatriya. Means Prabhupada said those Kshatriyas that escaped from Europe, I mean from India during Parasaram's tour, then they went to Europe. You know, they went through Central Asia and over to Europe. So they all have that kind of a background. You know, but over, you know, so many millions of years, they take on they have their groups, you know, it means they break down into communities and also into the Varnas and all that kind of stuff within that context. That's why it doesn't matter who they are, they still want to conquer everything, you know, like that. So you will have that, but there it's a very far out kind of white. You've never seen?
Yeah, I've seen.
You've seen? Yeah? Like that. They're a unique group. So that's the Brahminical white, you know, like that. This is the Kshatriya white. You know, it's white and red. That's white and gold. It's like that.
It's more like an ivory.
Yeah, yeah, like that. It's got the yellow in it rather than, yeah, be like when you get white, you get the white that's got a little bit of pink in it. You know,
off-white.
Yeah, an off-white that's got a little pink, or you get the one that's got a little yellow in it.
Yeah.
So the Brahminical is with the yellow, the Kshatriya is with the pink.
It's all about the color.
Yeah, it's all about the color. Goes back. But Narad Muni, yeah, it's like that. Maybe it's not all about the color. Sarva Sambhadani. Sattvatam Tantra means Vaishnava Pancharatra. By following those scriptures, the action are perceived to be different from karma, naish karmyam, since one becomes free from bondage. So that's the thing, is when you follow the Satipata Tantra, means the Vaishnava Tantra, the Pancharatra, that by following those same duties, even though you're still getting up, taking your bath the same way, brushing your teeth the same way as all the other scriptures are defining, but it's in the context of pleasing Krishna, therefore it's transcendental.
The internet.
Yeah, you get to hear. I mean, this is the last sentence, then we go to the next Anuchi. Otherwise, we'll open with that. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Shri Prabhupada ki jai.